DW Africa Link.
I therefore declare Hichilema Hakainde S to be president-elect.
Zambia has re-elected President Hakainde Hichilema for a second term. He won around 61% of the vote, giving him another 5 years in office. Hichilema says the result shows Zambia remains a nation of peace, law and democracy, where differences are settled at the ballot box. But the opposition paints a different picture, alleging intimidation, violence and arrest of key party members during the election. So how did this election unfold and what comes next for Zambia? That's what we are discussing today. Stay tuned.
Africa Link, every weekday here on DW.
This is Africa Link, the podcast that connects you to the stories that matter across Africa. I am Ajuate Nkrumah-Domina, your host for today. There will be 5 more years of Hakainde Hichilema as Zambia's president after he was declared the winner of the recent election. The opposition claimed there were acts of intimidation, arrest, violence, and irregularities. Several of its figures were detained on election night in what authorities called a raid targeting, quote, militia activity, end of quote. Local media reported that Hichilema's main rival, Brian Mundubile, and his running mate, Makibi Zulu, had gone into self-imposed exile at a UN agency in the capital, Lusaka, fearing arrest. Beyond the allegations and counter-allegations, how did this election actually play out? And what are citizens expecting from Hichilema's second term? We're joined by policy analyst Kelly Skaunda and DW's Glory Bushenge in Lusaka. Welcome you both. Glory, in my country Ghana, when election results are announced, there is widespread jubilation by ruling party members, sometimes going into hours. How is the mood in Zambia at the moment?
In Zambia, historically, that's the case as well. Today, it's a mixed reaction. First of all, this result was announced at a time when people would be expected to be sleeping. But of course, a lot of them stayed up to wait for the announcement, even though it was known earlier because of how the results were coming in. They were being announced in batches, and at a certain time, maybe before deep in the night, people had known that it was going to be the ruling party that would carry the day. So most of them that actually were waiting for the big announcement, I would argue, or one would argue, were those from the ruling party. And then when it was announced at 2:45, I saw from the national television, from our national TV, different places where these ruling party supporters were assembled to celebrate, and they were in jubilation. But obviously, it goes without saying that supporters of the opposition were dejected. And so that was a source of quietness in certain parts of the country.
Let me just also ask you quickly before I go to Kelly's for his initial comment as well. Was it a smooth ride for the ruling party, Glory?
They would say it wasn't exactly, because there were issues of, you know, violence, localized violence, such that they had to shun certain places during the time they were campaigning. I remember the last province that they were supposed to have gone to, they decided not to go and campaigned using virtual space. They did it online. But also, this is a party that just formed 3 months before the election. So they didn't have enough time to mobilize resources, and they had to use a road to travel from one place to another. And at some point, because of limited resources, they had to depend on the goodwill of the citizens. There's just so many things. So it wasn't as smooth as one would have wanted, as they would have wanted themselves.
Right. Kelly, let's look at the numbers. The ruling party won with just about 2.9 million of the votes. That's roughly 60%, you know, of the total votes cast, against the opposition's 1.8 million. What is your initial reaction to these numbers, to this election results?
Not entirely surprising because, first and foremost, a larger portion of those numbers are figures that are coming from our traditional strongholds of the ruling party, and that is the southern province, northwestern, and western provinces. And then also add to that the fact that in 2021, UPND had made inroads in areas that are traditionally associated with the other party. You can also see that they also made further inroads, which means that they've been able to build upon some of those numbers that they had previously. So yeah. So when you look at those numbers, they're not significantly different from the numbers in 2021.
And what does that say? Especially because Glory was talking about the fact that this opposition that has given or received 38% of the vote was formed barely 4 months into the election?
Yes. One of the most noteworthy things about this election is that in an unprecedented fashion, you had a political party, an opposition party, that failed to go and campaign in the stronghold of the ruling party, for fear of violence or threats of violence. So one would say that, okay, what if they had the opportunity to campaign in those areas? And as Glory pointed out, this is a political party that wasn't in existence until some 3 months ago. And the reason it wasn't in existence is because of what had been happening ever since UPND came into power. Since UPND came into power, there's been all these reports of the ruling party interfering in the internal wrangles or leadership wrangles of the former ruling party, leading to their inability to mobilize themselves, organize themselves for the past 4 or 5 years. Now, you can imagine that they only had 3 months in which to do this. So there was a coalition of political parties that came together. That is why they couldn't even field as many candidates as possible in areas where they could have done this. So this picture that we see today that reflects to a large extent the picture that they had in 2021 as UPND, could have been different, assuming that the political atmosphere in the country had not interfered with this political party's ability to mobilize themselves politically.
Well, we have spoken with the ruling party, and they've rejected claims that there were intimidation. They said the election was free, fair, and credible. From where you sit, I mean, the opposition has also listed certain incidents, including the arrest of some of the leading members of its party, which it says that they were acts of intimidation. From where you sit, does it look like this election was free, fair, and credible?
I wouldn't say that. Of course, I mean, the ruling party is expected naturally to say that it was free and fair, but from where I stand, no, it wasn't, because this opposition party gets into the covered boat to start campaigning. They wake up in the morning only to find that all their vehicles are damaged, and yet police are standing there. The matter is reported to the police. Nothing happens to them. They go into further into Northwestern Province. At some point, they are blocked by the police, and then at some point, they are allowed. They go to Western Province. They are addressing a public rally. The police come in and then they throw tear gas canisters into the crowd, and the meeting is over. And then a number of their members, those in the media team, and then the security team, they are picked up and arrested. And the political party issues the alert that these are the people that we are missing. They were arrested. We don't know where they've been kept. Incidences that speak to the absence of an election that you can describe as free and fair.
Interesting. Glory, let me return to you now. with all that Kellys has said, and I mean with the background of what the opposition has already said, what have they said after the election results were released? Have they said anything? How is it looking like in the camp of the opposition?
Yeah, the main opposition feels that the election has been rigged, and because of the reasons that Kellys has listed, among others. And another reason why they feel this is this way includes the roughly 6 hour suspension of vote counting on the first day that the Electoral Commission said was necessitated by outbreaks of violence against poll workers and the theft of marked ballot papers. So, and before I proceed with talking about why they feel it's rigged, I just want to borrow a bit from what you said. So the you said you've been speaking to the ruling party and they deny that there was any violence. And yet these are the ones who decided to suspend the vote counting because of violence. And they said that just a few minutes after the president had posted on his page saying it was a peaceful election. So again, it confuses you as to what is what, which is which, what do they believe, and other kind of stuff. So anyways, the main opposition candidate, Brian Mundubile, claimed that this delay in announcing the results created opportunities to manipulate them. International observer teams such as the Southern African Development Community SADC mission also confirmed that they were completely unable to monitor ballot boxes or tallying processes during the six-hour freeze. So you have a situation in certain polling stations where poll agents, opposition observers had to be chucked out of the place where the ballot papers were, only to be replaced by army personnel. So again, it creates credence it gives credence to people that are saying that those are the times when maybe extra ballot boxes, it's not me saying, it's, you know, the people, ballot boxes could have been introduced in those places or tempered with.
Glory, are these allegations or these are documented incidents that the media can prove?
They are both. They are both allegations and documented, because we see these people that have been victims of these situations have been posting on their own pages. So there are videos, there are photos to show for that.
Okay, but we cannot independently verify as DW that these incidents have
happened. Exactly. That's why I said I'm not saying that I, for one, believe or I'm the one saying these things. I'm reporting what I hear and what I see.
Great. Thank you for that. It looks like it's a highly tense situation, even though, like you rightly said, Glory, the president posted a thing about how free, how fair the election was. Let me actually just borrow a quote from one of the things he said. He said, "This election showed the world who we are, a nation of peace, a nation of law and order, a democratic nation that settles our differences at the ballot box and nowhere else." But it's increasingly sounding like that's not the case. Has the opposition given any indication that they're going to take this matter up maybe to the court?
At the moment, I haven't heard much, but I wouldn't be surprised if they do. Maybe they are just trying to go back to the drawing board and discuss what the way forward should be. Because as I said earlier, this is a result that was finally announced in the early hours of the day. So we don't know what has happened now. I'm yet to find out what decisions they are making going forward.
Very well. Kellys, back to you. Now Hichilema has a second term mandate. How significant is this re-election for the entire political landscape of Zambia?
I think how significant it is, depends on, the two perspectives. And one perspective is for those that are members of the ruling party. And the other one is a perspective for those in the opposition. For those in the, in the ruling party, it's a mandate that gives them an opportunity to build on economic fundamentals that they've been able to achieve in the past 5 years. For instance, you know, the macroeconomic indicators that they set out at the beginning of their term of office, such as getting inflation down to single digit, restructure the debt that, you know, they had inherited, building up these foreign reserves, you know, stabilizing the foreign exchange rate, and so on. And then I think they are looking forward to the resumption of negotiations with the International Monetary Fund for, another package that should support the next phase of, you know, the economic program that they set out to embark on, namely to, you know, create more jobs, expand the economy beyond, you know, the existing sectors, so that they're able to employ as many young people as possible. That this is a period of growth. They are aiming at $65 billion annual, you know, growth rate. They want to to create jobs to the tune of about, you know, 2 million and so on. So that's the picture. As far as the, you know, the ruling party is concerned. For those that are in the opposition, I think what it means is that, first, they had very little time to mobilize. So they can comfort themselves, and rightly so, that had they had enough time to mobilize themselves without political interference from the ruling party, they could have done better. So I think it would be time for them now to go back to the drawing board and look at, you know, their strengths and weaknesses.
Right. Barring any court procedure that may drag, you know, the second term of Hichilema, let's compare his first term to what lies ahead now for Zambia. Do you think that largely the president was able to fulfill the promises he came into power with in the first term? And what should Zambians expect of him in the second term, Kellys?
There were things that he promised that he was going to do, particularly the reduction in the cost of living. That was a major thing that he promised. But what I noticed was that the realities of the economy that inherited, and I'd remember this. He's a president that had never served in government before and has never been in any elected office. So the kind of things that he settled down to do are things that, you know, ordinarily would be expected of anyone. And that is that since there was a debt default, he needed to go into a program to negotiate this. Although that process had been in place, you know, by the time that he was coming into office. The other things that she indicates, you know, he promised and that he has fulfilled, he talks about free education. Free education is not entirely his introduction, but there have been some aspects of it that he speaks to free education, because we've had free education from the time we had independence, but because of the ups and downs of the economies, sometimes past governments have introduced cost-sharing mechanisms, so that at some point it wasn't truly, you know, free until Ara Indeh-Ijunama came into power and passed a law that supported the policy that education shall be free from primary school up to secondary school. The restoration of new allowances to students that had been removed before is something that is happy about, and I don't think anyone is unhappy about it. It's fine. You know, there've been some increase in what is known as the Constituents Development Fund, which gives a semblance of decentralization, because, you know, when these local authorities are given a bit more money, then they are able to decide how they are going to use it. So those are some of the things that you know, he's been happy about, that he has achieved, you know, a lot more things.
Mm. Glory, what are the expectations of Zambians for Hichilema's second term?
The expectations are that he improves the cost of living So the economy is the single most important issue that shaped this election as well. And so it acted as a direct referendum on President Hakainde Hichilema's macro level reforms and the severe everyday financial pressures. So while he has achieved all those, as Kelly's has said, he has achieved lower inflation. As of June, it was as low as 6.5%. And he has achieved debt restructuring, the social protection, the social cash transfer, increase in CDF, and all that. It still needs to translate into everyday lives. People have to feel the impact of those macroeconomic achievements. So they'll be expecting him to work on that. They'll also be expecting him to create more opportunities, economic opportunities, career paths. He has been driving employment in sectors such as health, teaching, and citizens now want him to look at other sectors as well, because there's just more to employment than just nursing and teaching. And also the fact that this election created a situation where the country became somewhat polarized, it should be working towards maintaining social cohesion.
Definitely social cohesion is something key. So thank you for bringing that up. Kelly, as we wrap up, 5 years from now, if we're having another election and we are judging Hichilema's second term, what is that one issue that you think we should judge him by? What would success of his second term mean to you?
Yeah, for me, the most obvious definition of development, given some of the public policy challenges that have been persistent and that every past government has not been able to deal with, those problems that start at the community level. We have had a development approach which has been top down. We haven't had a development approach that has been bottom up, or a kind of development that has been able to balance the top down and then the bottom up approach. What I would like to see is a situation where the bottom-up approach is one that, one, has a lot of business activities, small business activities, some of them supported by government, some of them supported by the private sector, but there should be a policy that should activate this in a lot of our communities so that we can see decent forms of income generation in our communities. Right. I'd like to see investment in public housing so that our shanty compounds, bad-looking housing structures, are no longer in existence, so that we can stamp out these repeated pandemics such as, cholera that come in every rainy season. To me, that would be a definition of the fact that, yes, Hakainde Hichilema has achieved something that even an ordinary person can feel.
Very well. Thank you so much for speaking with us. You just heard Kelly Skaunda. He's a policy analyst. Earlier, you heard DW's Glory Mushenge also joining us from Lusaka. Grateful for your time, both of you.
Zambia's election may have been decisive on paper, but what do ordinary citizens make of the process and the road ahead?
Virtual space. They did it online. But also, this is a party that just formed 3 months before the election. So they didn't have enough time to mobilize resources.
And so when I look at the competition between the incumbent and the opposition, I feel the opposition has done very well. Looking at the fact that he just popped up and became a very aggressive competitor against the incumbent. Overall, it has been peaceful. Although we had very few pockets of violence here and there, people challenging the outcome and stuff, especially from the National Tutoring Center, a few pockets of people not feeling like they are not being treated fair, this kind of. But overall, it is well.
We need a change, but for this point, we can't do anything. We are going to support the president.
The election from this year, I don't think so if it's free and fair. I don't think so. They are democracy in Zambia.
They have stolen for us. This wasn't supposed to be like this.
Zambia's election has set the stage for another 5 years under President Hichilema. But as we've heard, citizens and analysts will be watching closely to see how this mandate is used. It remains to be seen whether the opposition will challenge the election results or accept defeat. Whatever the case, we will keep you updated. For now, you can join the conversation by sharing your thoughts with us on Facebook and on TikTok at DW Africa. Listen to us on Spotify or wherever you get your podcast. And don't forget to subscribe to our DW Africa YouTube channel. This show was co-produced and edited by Eddie Micah Jr. I am Ajua Tinkrama Domina. Bye for now.
Made for my